Good evening, everybody. We're here. It's Monday, April 27th. We've had 72 hours till the draft, and we're going to be diving into that all night. Thanks for tuning in. I'm your host, Justin Emery, and we are live from Red Sound Studios in Warrenton, PA. As always, I have my co-host, Mike, here. How's it going?
It's great to be with you. With 3 days to the draft, I'm telling you, I'm really excited for this year's crop of talent to come in, especially with all the overhaul that Chip Kelly has brought to this roster and all the questions. And now you get to see what his true plan is, only a couple days away.
Definitely. We have a jam-packed show with a bunch of guests. We have Jeff Warren of PhiladelphiaSportsTable.com joining us at 8:15. We have Jimmy Kemsky of the Eagles beat writer for the Philly Voice. He'll be joining us at 8:45. And then we have Patrick Causey of EagleDelphia.com joining us at 9 o'clock to talk Mariota and the Eagles.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited for that. And first, we're going to talk about our question of the day. And today, our question is, you know, I'll tell you, I don't have one Eagles jersey for anybody who's on the roster. So the question is, who's the safest jersey to buy right now? If you wanted to buy a jersey, you're going to have a player that's going to be on the Eagles for the next 5 years.
Now, do you want just the Eagles jersey or just the jersey in the
city? Eagles jersey. Eagles jersey. Because I'm not going to go to a, you know what I mean? I go to a fair amount of Eagles games during the year, and it's like, I don't want to wear a DeSean jersey. Not that I don't like LeSean McCoy. I would definitely wear a McCoy, but I want a new. I need a new jersey. But every time I buy one, I seem like I jinx the player of me.
I just was talking about, I don't know if you meant for all four teams put together or just the Eagles.
Just the Eagles. But, I mean, this is going to be an exciting year, an exciting draft. And with Mariota going everywhere from 1 to 12 to even the Chargers, nobody really knows.
Well, no, I'm pretty sure in that trade rumor that's going around, the Chargers would not get the number 2 pick from Mariota.
We would get it.
We would get it. The Chargers would get
the 20th pick and Sam Bradford.
Yes.
Which, I mean, I could see. Because for them, it's only, you know what I mean, 2 or 3 picks down. And you get a quarterback for the future, and maybe they go draft somebody in the second or third round.
Yeah, because
get a lot, you know what I mean?
I believe the Chargers have the 17th pick, I think. I'll look that up.
To be honest, I think that would be a sign and trade, too. Because Bradford's already expressed, his number's at 13 right now, but he's expressed willingness to sign a long-term deal for a lot less money.
Yeah, but he doesn't want to sign it with anybody other than the Eagles.
Right.
Or a team of comparison skill level.
I'm pretty sure he would sign with the Chargers with their coaching staff and what they've been doing. You know what I mean? That's not a bad fit for him either. And for Tennessee to get a nice veteran quarterback like that,
he doesn't want to go to Tennessee now.
Who, Phillip Rivers?
No. Sam Bradford.
I mean, he's not going to Tennessee. Phillip Rivers is going to Tennessee.
Oh, yeah. Tennessee's where Phillip Rivers wants to go.
Right. And that would be a good fit for him if they can add some, you know, other pieces, because they'll probably get another draft pick from the Chargers or something like that, or maybe a fourth pick from the Eagles. There'll probably be a couple extra things than just Phillip Rivers. So if they build a little bit more through the draft, you see Phillip Rivers probably have 2-3 good years in it still. And
easily.
There's not, you know what I mean? He's still, in this point of his career, he's definitely a top 10 quarterback, if not a, you know, if not even a top 5 through the last year and a half or so. And if you tell me this, Zach Mettenberger has that same kind of frame, you know what I mean? Not saying he's as good as Phillip Rivers by any means, but if that's a guy who's going to groom him for 2 years, and then he competes for a job down the road, you know what I mean? That's kind of the ideal situation for that quarterback group. Instead of them drafting Mariota and have 2 projects on your team.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm just nervous about everybody's stock going high on Mariota. I'm starting to think he's going number 1. Like, I'm starting to think the number 2 pick is going to be too late.
I don't think so. I don't think they take Mariota either. I just don't think their system, I just don't see them as a fit. I don't know. I just don't think they can pass on Winston. It's going to be too hard to do. And his character issues, I mean, at the end of the day, he was drunk once and yelled something on a table, which every college kid done. I'll tell you right now, I mean, at every college, I mean, talking to, sitting here across from me as my host, we both went to Penn State. And we know that people party and people have fun and people, and especially the football players. So just because someone got him on YouTube doing that, that's not necessarily a terrible thing. I mean, who never, you know, stole something from the grocery store? And now it comes out, he says, you know, whatever. I think that was the worst thing he could have done, was try to change the story now. That makes you look like a liar. But
I didn't even understand that. Like, did you see the explanation that he gave for it?
He said the employee gave it to him.
Yeah.
But then they caught him on camera because he's famous.
Yeah.
Like, he learned a lesson that I'm famous that day. Not that he's a bad person. And the first thing, as far as everybody's concerned, this girl has never won a case against him. Now, I'm never going to talk. I was not in the room on said date. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I can't comment on what happened. But if their government said it was okay, and then they went to the civil court and she's lost multiple cases there, that's,
well, I believe
it's hard to tell me that that's really a transgression.
Well, he's got a civil case pending against him right now.
Yeah, but this is, I mean, this case has been dismissed once or twice already. Mind you, you know what I mean? This is now 2.5 years later.
Yeah. Yeah. And the team that drafts it. Now, got to also remember, is Tampa Bay going to take him number one, because the girl that's got the lawsuit against him lives like 20 minutes from their stadium. If you guarantee you, they draft him, all right, number one.
I mean, if you
and
draft
they put
him,
hold on, they draft him number
Des
one.
He's under Des Bryant rule.
Yeah. But I'm saying, if you draft him, the Buccaneers will have a protest at their stadium game one.
No, they won't.
Absolutely.
Absolutely not. It'll be ungrounded. As much as you want to say, I would never want any man to take advantage of any woman, that's wrong in any sense. But, I mean, you have to trust the court system. You have to give that its due respect. So, as far as Jameis Winston's character issues, that's his question. You can't really say, because he's never missed a practice. I don't know the fact that I've never heard that he's missed a practice. I've never heard any of his teammates said he hasn't worked just as hard or harder than anyone on the field. You hear the things where he's in the building first and he leaves last. You hear those good things that you have to hear about quarterbacks. So, I mean, I'll give Jameis Winston the nod right now. I mean, if I'm Philadelphia, if I'm the Eagles, I want Mariota. But looking at a football player as a whole, I would have to go, you know what I mean? I would have to go Jameis Winston right now, who's going to come in the NFL and do it from the onset. But then again, these two players played. And Mariota was the winner. So think at the end of it, they look at that again and say, these guys played up against each other and Jameis Winston couldn't stay in the building?
Listen. I'm going to give you this little stat. I told you this off the air before we came on. They had they had that poll with all those GMs.
Yeah. 20 GMs now.
20 GMs. All right. Now, it doesn't tell you which 20, and that also takes into account that there's 12 teams unaccounted for in this.
And you don't know which 12.
Yeah, you don't know which. There's 12 teams unaccounted for. But of the 20 GMs polled, 9 of them thought Winston was going to be disappointing or a bust, versus 4 for Mariota. And 8 of them said that Mariota would have been a perennial Pro Bowler and an all-time great, versus 1 for Jameis Winston.
Right. And mind you, that was it was 5 categories. They had to put each of them in one.
Yeah, the 5 categories
So you're looking at
all-time great, perennial Pro Bowler,
right,
average starter, disappointing for where he was drafted, and total bust.
So you're saying that a 1/3 of the GMs, approximately, a little less than that, are set up, I think Jameis Winston is set up to be disappointing or bust. So underperform in the NFL level. Now, that's a third of the league there. So that's a little scary. But, you know, you don't know. I mean, it's a lot easier to judge a quarterback when you have Tom Brady. I mean, you don't know which teams. I mean, I'm sure if you had Tampa Bay GM, he wouldn't have said bust. I mean, he couldn't possibly. You probably didn't even pick the top 5-10 teams who are going to be in it. I would figure I would ask the last 20 because they can probably be the most objective. You know, Green Bay. It's real easy for Green Bay to look at Jameis Winston and say he's not going to be a good quarterback when they get to look at Aaron Rodgers every day. But, you know, when your team starts, like Tampa Bay and Tennessee, I mean, who is the last great quarterback after Tampa Bay had? Even when who did they win the Super Bowl with?
Brad Johnson.
Right. Brad Johnson was as close to a game manager as there ever has been. So, as far as Tampa Bay is looking at this draft, they got to take the best guy on the board.
Honestly, I'm not going to proclaim that I'm a Tampa Bay historian by any stretch, but I really think that it was Steve Young.
He played for Tampa Bay?
Yeah, before he went to the Niners. Back when they wore those creamsicle jerseys.
Yeah, but that's not their quarterback. He left, and then he went and won Super Bowl. You know what I mean? He's going to be in the Hall of Fame as a Niner.
I mean, he is in the Hall of Fame as a Niner.
He played for them.
Now, I guess I would say Jeff Garcia because he went to Pro Bowls down there, but he went to Pro Bowls everywhere.
Right.
He went to Pro Bowls in San Francisco. He went to a Pro Bowl in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he gave them two Pro Bowl seasons in a playoff.
Well, was that with T.O.?
What?
In Atlanta? Or, no, I'm sorry, Tampa Bay?
T.O. never played in Tampa Bay.
Where did Garcia and T.O. play?
San Francisco.
San Francisco. So he played in Tampa Bay before that?
No, he played Tampa Bay at the end of his career, after Philadelphia.
After Philadelphia.
Yeah.
So you can't give him Jeff Garcia either.
No.
And he's not a great quarterback. He's a good quarterback.
He gave him Pro Bowl seasons.
You know, funny, you bring him up, and now I've heard his name 3 or 4 times now, and that's probably more than I've heard his name in the last 5 years combined. But if there was one guy who I would say for Chip Kelly who could come out as a rookie right now, give him Jeff Garcia. Just smart.
Why?
Quick feet, speed, to run the read option. He was good at the West Coast offense. He had a decent arm, and he was smart with the football.
He was
perfect.
Sneakily, what's the word?
Athletic.
Well, yeah, he was. Sneakily competent. Like, he was
smart. He was a smart quarterback. He knew what he was doing. He knew how to run an offense. He knew how to run a team.
Efficient. He was sneakily efficient.
Right.
On offense.
And if you would say the first thing that Chip Kelly probably puts on his board for his quarterback, it's not speed, it's not a big arm, it's efficiency and consistency. Because when you're going to run 70 plays a game, you need to run 70 successful plays. That's how he wants to draw it up. He's not trying to run 70 plays and gain yards on 50 of them. No. You need to feed the beast in this sense. As far as get 3 yards, 5 yards, clock moving, defense on their feet.
Hold on, I got it. When you say feed the beast, I have to take the jab at it. They still should have gave it to Marshawn.
Yes. For the Super Bowl?
Yes.
Feed the beast.
Feed the beast.
Remember the system. Remember the core. And you know what? As much as I love LeSean McCoy, as much as it hurts me to say this, he was not a great fit for this system.
No, he wasn't.
You don't need a guy who's going to... Now, I'm not saying he's a dancer because he had a lot of success and he led the Eagles franchise in rushing. And he had a year where the Eagles led the league in rushing with him as their running back. So, not saying he can be successful in any system. But for as far as Chip Kelly, he can't lose yards. You know what I mean? You can't have 2nd and 12, 3rd and 10. You can't start with 2nd and 6 and go to 2nd and 3rd and 10.
And this is Shady we're talking about. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
He takes too many losses, and I think you're going to see this year a lot less.
I hope so. I mean, I hope so.
I mean, that's going to be if these running backs are better than the other ones, you know, than Shady. And now you're going to see if Darren Sproles can come in and be more of a playmaker now that we have more depth at running back. But we're going to see. We're going to see if. You know, you got some big shoes to fill when you trade LeSean McCoy for a player who didn't play last year. Now, yes, he was rookie of the year, and yes, he's a great prospect, and now you have all this inside linebacker depth. But you got to show me now. You know, I'm going to sit here and I'll defend Chip Kelly until September, but if his first two, three games come through and things start to go not that well and DeMarco gets hurt or fumbles and Ryan Matthews goes down, you know what I mean? This is going to be a whole different team then, and they're not going to go far. But if these running backs are what we think they are, and you know what I mean, can be as good and now, like I say, when they're what they think they are, as far as they are the two leading running backs in yards per carry from the shotgun. And I would say probably over the last 2 years, the Eagles have run more shotgun runs than anyone. So those two things bode well.
Absolutely. And we're going to bring our first guest in. He's on the line right now. We have on the phone Jeff Warren from the Philadelphia Sports Table podcast. He's joined us many times before. You guys have all heard him here before talking Eagles with us. Hey, Jeff, you're on with Justin and Mike. How's it going?
Hey, guys. How you doing, man? Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Definitely, definitely. Glad that you can find some time to join us and break down the draft that is now 72 hours away.
Cannot wait. I mean, this is what excitement is about in the NFL during the off season. I mean, you don't get this with the NBA, the NHL, Major League Baseball, all of those drafts. Yeah, they're great to follow and even watch at times. But when it comes to the NFL draft, man, oh my gosh, this is excitement personified. Definitely is.
Oh yeah, and especially this year. It seems every year it kind of gets a little more exciting, but I can't remember the last time, you know, a draft in general or an Eagles draft has been so exciting and with so many questions. I mean, you don't know if guys are going to go in the top 10 or even fall. I mean, nobody's draft board really looks the same. Do you remember a time when it's been this exciting and unknown, I guess?
I guess if you would take a look back at the 1999 draft, perhaps. I mean, you had Eagles fans out there wanting Andy Reid, the brand new coach of the Philadelphia Eagles, to take Ricky Williams. And there was so much suspense. There was so much written in the media about the fact that Andy Reid needed to do this. This absolute beast of a running back in Ricky Williams.
Right.
How could you not take him? But then he completely surprised everyone by taking his franchise quarterback for the next decade and beyond. It was Donovan McNabb from Syracuse. And I think there was a lot of anticipation leading up to that 1999 draft. There was a lot of uncertainty, in some people's minds, uncertainty as to what was going to be happening with that draft. A lot of people who were just non-emotional were saying, yes, you got to take Donovan McNabb. You got to get your quarterback of the future.
Right.
But Philly fans were just saying, you got to take Ricky Williams. And it was a shock. And there was a lot of excitement surrounding that particular draft. But in terms of in recent memory, I don't think we've seen anything like this. And it's because of Chip Kelly. It's because of the fact that he holds all of the cards right now, and we have no clue what's going to be happening.
Yeah, and it's really fun to see. And especially, you know, I think after the first year with the playoff run, it kind of took everybody's mind from rebuild to win now so quick. And now we see him overhaul this roster and in such a different way, I think, than every other coach. I mean, he almost seems like a good businessman more than anything else, finding value around the league. So it's really exciting to see what he's going to do and trying to recycle, you know, some great players coming forward. But what do you think coming out of this draft is the biggest need that we need to have?
Quite frankly, I think the biggest need is on defense, whether it is a position in the secondary, whether it is even a linebacker at this point. Because, listen, as much as we didn't like him for a lot of years, many Eagles fans didn't like Casey Matthews, he is gone. The rest of the depth chart is not very strong. You've got a first-round draft selection last year that hasn't produced anything. And, frankly, we have not heard him doing anything in the offseason to maybe try to better his playing potential. And that really does concern me. We've got Trent Cole, now playing for another team. He's not there at the linebacker position. So linebacker, cornerback are definitely have to be top priorities. But I'm going to go back to what I initially said during my, opening remarks after the first question you asked was right. Andy Reid selected a franchise quarterback. And, gentlemen, I don't think we have that franchise quarterback necessarily on our roster right now. So, yes, do I want defense addressed? Absolutely. However, the quarterback position needs to be addressed the way Chip Kelly needs it to be addressed. It is right up there along with the defensive backs and the linebackers I think the team needs.
Definitely. I agree. And, I mean, the quarterback is the most important position, really, in any sport. And there's no better match than Mariota and Chip. Like, Chip's going to do whatever it takes to go and get his guy. I honestly believe that. But I also believe that he will go number one. I think Tampa Bay will take Mariota. If Mariota does go number one and Chip then can't get him, should he stay put at 20 or would you consider moving back, collecting more draft picks, and getting more of a chance to hit on some defensive players in the later rounds that can come
well,
and still be?
Yeah, I would, with all due respect, I you and I are going to just disagree a little bit. I don't think Mariota is going to be taken number one by the Buccaneers. My rationale for it is if you take a look at Lovie Smith and the quarterbacks that he has had throughout his entire tenure in the NFL as a head coach, and I'm going to disqualify last year because really the guy just didn't have much of anything in terms of real sheer talent and a lot of skilled positioning at the quarterback position. He really didn't have it. But I mean, just take a look at, you know, Rex Grossman ended up taking him to a Super Bowl. You know, he's had Jay Cutler, certainly not the type of quarterback that a Marcus Mariota like. Is Marcus Mariota like? And you also had, you could throw in there, you know, Kyle Orton when he was, when Lovie Smith was coaching the Bears. So what you're seeing is Lovie Smith during a long tenure as head coach of the Chicago Bears not having the type of quarterback like a Marcus Mariota. Why? Because Marcus Mariota, in my personal opinion, probably does not fit that system very well. Is he explosive? Can he be explosive? Yes, we've seen that in college. But I think what we need to remember with regard to the quarterback position is that certain quarterbacks will advance and be a perfect fit for certain teams and certain coaches' schemes and systems. I mean, let's just take, for example, Ryan Tannehill, okay? He's been doing okay, not great. He hasn't been on fire, but he's been doing okay in Miami. You take Russell Wilson up in Seattle. Now, you take Ryan Tannehill and put him in Seattle's system, it's not going to work. You take Russell Wilson, put him down in Miami, it's likely not going to work. It all depends on personnel. It all depends on the system. It all depends on the scheme. I do not necessarily believe that Marcus Mariota is the type of quarterback that Lovie Smith is going to need to take the Buccaneers to where they need to be, not picking number one next year. So I would kind of disagree with you on that aspect. Well, again, all due respect, but I'm sorry, go ahead.
I actually agree with you as well. And as a little follow-up to that, would you be okay with the Eagles trading up to get Mariota, and what would you be okay with parting with?
Oh, absolutely. I would be okay with it. I believe, and I've said it on the Philadelphia Sports Table podcast show many times, I think it's a 50-50 chance that they do land Marcus Mariota. I think Chip Kelly's going to do all he can to land Marcus Mariota. I'm leaning more on the 50% side that thinks Mariota is going to be wearing an Eagles uniform. How can it happen? Listen, this may seem very oversimplistic in a way because we know you've got Tennessee involved, you've got San Diego Chargers involved, you've got the Cleveland Browns involved. Hypothetically speaking, say they trade Sam Bradford for the 19th pick for the Browns. Eagles then have the 19th and 20th pick. They give that 19th and 20th pick to the Titans along with next year's number one draft pick. That is three number one draft picks during the course of 2 years.
Yeah.
That does not happen too often. And they sweeten the deal by throwing in a Michael Kendricks, throwing in an Evan Mathis, Brandon Boykin, maybe not, of course, not all three of them, however, but they sweeten the deal a little bit by trading some players. That's how you move up to the number two spot, where I think Marcus Mariota is going to go if the Eagles are going to draft him. So that's kind of the trade scenario that I think could potentially happen. Again, may sound oversimplistic, but I think when you think about three first-round picks over the course of 2 years, a player or two to sweeten the deal for a quarterback that many people do not believe is going to be very successful in the NFL, depending on the system he's in, I think that's a pretty good deal.
Definitely, for sure. Three first-round picks. That's hard to turn down by anybody. Now,
exactly.
I'm sorry, what was that?
I just said exactly. That's very hard to turn down.
Yeah. Now, the news came out today about the Eagles picking up the fifth-year option for Fletcher Cox. He's going to make just under $8 million. Now, his name has been tossed in trade rumors, and obviously one deterrent from getting a great player like him, though, is that you would only have him under contract for this year. Is picking up the fifth year and making it two-year deal, if you would trade for him, make him more attractive in a trade?
I would think potentially. It really depends on, honestly, and we just don't know. There's just so much we don't know of what Chip Kelly can do. Listen, it's not going to surprise me if Fletcher Cox were to be traded. I mean, and I'm not sure if the money necessarily in the fifth year is guaranteed. I'm not sure if it's guaranteed. However, it just wouldn't surprise me if Fletcher Cox was potentially part of a deal to move up and get Marcus Mariota, or, and we need to remember this too, the draft isn't just the first round. There's a lot of other rounds that the Eagles are going to be picking in. Don't be surprised to see Chip Kelly moving, dealing, making trades, taking draft picks from this year and that year, trading, getting, obtaining draft picks as well. There's a lot of back and forth that's going to be happening. So do I think Fletcher Cox is still technically on the table as a possible trade piece? I do. Do I think it's more unlikely at this point because of them picking up that fifth-year option? A little bit. However, don't be surprised to see if Fletcher Cox is potentially traded.
Yeah, and I think that would be a tough loss. I think really our best piece and our easiest piece to get rid of probably would be Brandon Boykin, especially when you see Billy Davis wanted to run a lot more base defense and go with that hybrid at that position. I just don't think they like his size. But at the same time, I think Brandon Boykin might be the best slot corner in the NFL.
I would definitely agree with you. You know, but you have to remember, too, with Brandon Boykin, is that he is one of those holdover pieces from the Andy Reid era. And as Chip Kelly has demonstrated on countless occasions here, he doesn't particularly care for those individuals within his scheme from the Andy Reid era. I mean, when you get rid of a DeSean Jackson, when you don't re-sign a Jeremy Maclin, when you trade a LeSean McCoy, it's not that he doesn't care about the person. He didn't care about a certain level of productivity based upon his system. His system doesn't mean they're not good players. Yes. Do I think it stinks that a lot of them are gone? Quite frankly, yes. But again, I believe in Chip Kelly in what he's doing. Brandon Boykin, like you just brought up, he's one of those holdover pieces from the Andy Reid era. Chip Kelly did not pick him. And Chip Kelly wants his centerpieces on the field, not necessarily Andy Reid. That's my take on it.
Definitely. And you just mentioned, you know, Sean Jackson's gone, Jeremy Maclin's gone, LeSean McCoy's gone. I don't know if you heard what Mike said at the top of the show, but he mentioned about, you know, how he owns a bunch of Eagles jerseys and he doesn't have a single jersey of anybody on the team anymore. So my question, do you have a jersey of somebody on the team? And if not, who do you think is the safest bet to get at this point?
Here's what I do on an annual basis. I'll tell you, the last 2 years, I actually got a Lane Johnson jersey, and I was at the link when I got that jersey. My wife got me a tour of the link for my birthday. We went down there. It was a great time. We ended up in the pro shop. I ended up getting a Lane Johnson jersey. Pretty amazing, yeah. Because I was advocating on our Philadelphia Sports Table podcast show how I wanted them to draft D. Milliner, the cornerback that went to the Jets, who hasn't really done much of anything. So certainly eat a lot of crow on that with the show. But I got a Lane Johnson jersey. Last year, I decided to get a Jordan Matthews jersey. And this was before week one even started. So I have been pretty lucky so far in terms of my jerseys. This year, who knows? Depends on who they pick in the third round. Depends on who they pick in the first round. So I'm gonna wait and see what happens after this weekend before I go spending $100 on a jersey.
Definitely. Right when the NFL made the switch over to the Nike jerseys, I went out and I got me a LeSean McCoy, and I said, you know, he's going to be here till the day he retires. I don't have to worry about that. And now I'm sitting there with a DeSean Jackson and a LeSean McCoy jersey.
Oh, well, you know what? I did have a DeSean Jackson jersey as well. I had a LeSean McCoy jersey from his rookie year, which was number 29. So I've got that jersey. That's a pretty cool jersey to have.
That last jersey might be worth something someday, the 29 McCoy. franchise leading rushing. So
yeah.
Just coming through. I mean, I'd like to see some wide receiver depth with this team. And going into that, with mentioning Jordan Matthews, what do you think is the supplement to him? What does the system need? Does it need another, maybe like a Jeremy Maclin, like a speed type guy, or do we need more size?
I think first and foremost, what Chip Kelly is going to be doing from an offensive perspective, and it seems plainly obvious to us outsiders, is that the run is going to be even that much more prevalent this coming season with DeMarco Murray, with Ryan Matthews, Darren Sproles. You know, the run is going to be prevalent. And the one thing that Chip Kelly covets are wide receivers who can block. He likes bigger wide receivers who can get out there, block, understands their role and how a wide receiver successfully blocking a corner or a linebacker is going to be able to get a running back an extra 5 to 10 yards perhaps. So I think it's going to be somebody with a little bit bigger size, a little bit bigger stature. One guy I'm going to be looking at, and I wrote it in one of my columns recently, is a wide receiver Desmond Lewis out of Central Arkansas. I mean, he's a guy who's 6'4", 214 pounds. He caught 64 receptions for 945 yards and 9 touchdowns. All of them were career highs when he was there. But the one thing that's also important for the wide receiver position in Chip Kelly's system is yards after the catch. Last year, the Birds were 6th in the league in yards after the catch. Listen, Desmond Lewis, from everything I've seen, he's got great hands, great hand-to-eye coordination. He can make that first defender miss, get those yards after the catch. They were 6th in the league, like I said, last year. Chip Kelly's going to want to be on top again and do even better than that 6th in the league. So I think you're looking at Desmond Lewis. And frankly, I also like a guy that was talked about in the media as well from New Hampshire, R.J. Harris, wide receiver. I mean, he's going to be a later pick. And it's going to be interesting to see what gems Chip Kelly is going to be able to take, you know, out of the rough. I mean, R.J. Harris is the type of guy, he ranked 76th best wide receiver in the draft coming in at this point. So he is going to be down the board. But listen, he caught 310 career passes for 4,328 yards and 36 touchdowns while at New Hampshire. The guy, and here's the thing, here's what's key, is that Chip Kelly finds value in an individual like R.J. Harris because of his size, length, versatility on the field, but off the field, his outstanding character and a very high football IQ. And that's what we need to remember when Chip Kelly is drafting these players. They are going to have a high football IQ and they are going to have outstanding character. That's what the core of team building is for Chip Kelly. So those are two that I personally like.
Right.
In terms of wide receivers, of course, there are some others as well. Jalen Strong, you know, Sammy Coates, all these guys, we've heard about their stats, and they've basically been you know, the media kind of just puts it out there all the time. So I don't think I necessarily need to go into that. But, they're definitely going to draft a wide receiver or two. It's going to be interesting to see who it is.
Right. And one last question before we let you go, before I take up too much of your time. But with the way that Chip Kelly has gone this offseason, does it show you that he values defensive talent over offensive talent? And does it show you that he feels he can produce with lesser offensive players in his scheme rather than studs? I mean, leave those three, you know, players we mentioned earlier in the last couple of years.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think what you saw, of course, during the course of the offseason with free agency is that he wanted to build the defense through already, you know, somewhat established players in the NFL. He wanted to use free agency to really help restructure his defense in a way, especially the secondary, of course. When I think he looks at from a drafting standpoint, and well, I should say that little caveat here, I think we're going to see him focus a little bit more on the offensive side of the ball, perhaps, during this draft. Now, what's really interesting is the fact that he, along with Howie Roseman, of course, has drafted more defensive players over the course of the past 2 years than offensive players. But they didn't do too much in terms of free agency with regard to the offensive side of the ball. They did have DeMarco Murray, of course, Ryan Matthews, and bringing in Sam Bradford. So maybe my theory has just completely gone out the window right there. But I just think that free agency, they gave a lot of money to Byron Maxwell. They gave a lot of money. They gave 1 year contract to Walter Thurman. I really think that an offensive minded coach like Chip Kelly is going to focus a little bit more on the offense. But you know, before I go, and I know I drone on and on sometimes. But I'll say this, and I hope your listeners, you know, who may be Chip Kelly doubters, hear this and understand it well. You know, I've said on our podcast show time and time again, you know, everybody wanted a major overhaul and a regime change from the Andy Reid era. So let's not forget how people wanted to run Andy Reid out of town, start over after that awful 4-2 season from a few years ago. You know, I mean, things with Andy Reid got stale. We knew what to expect, right? So let's not have a short-term memory about this. You know, a major front office change and overall happened. Jeffrey Lurie hired the most interesting and unconventional coach the NFL has seen in recent years. We still don't know what to expect from Chip Kelly, and that's why I enjoy being a fan of his and, you know, what he has brought to the Eagles so far. It's going to be an extremely interesting draft, offensive, defensive side of the ball. And even special teams as well. Got to keep that in mind. He really, really values special teams and those type of players.
Definitely. I'm one of the blind Chip Kelly followers. Like, I don't think he can do any wrong, at least not yet, not in my opinion. You know, the guy knows football.
I'm definitely down for the ride, at least. It's definitely
absolutely. In Chip we trust, man. In Chip we trust.
Right. Oh, absolutely. I want to get a whole clothing line.
Chip Kelly jersey.
Yeah, if they make a Chip Kelly jersey, and I will buy one in every color. I'll buy a green one, a black one, a white one, those ugly yellow and blue jerseys. I'll get that. Hey, Jeff, thanks for taking the time out tonight to join us, and we definitely would like to have you on the program again in the future.
Absolutely, guys. Keep up the great work. I appreciate you having us on. If your listeners out there want to follow my co-host Len and I at our podcast show on Twitter, you can do so at Philadelphia PST, and you can catch us on our Facebook page. Just search out Philadelphia Sports Table. And thanks again, guys. Really appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, Jeff. Always a good time having him on. Again, that was Jeff of PhiladelphiaSportsTable.com. It's really good. And for everybody out there listening that wants to jump on the phone line, number is 347-857-4467. Call in, whatever you want to talk about. You know, I know we're 3 days away from the draft, but if you want to talk to Mike about the Phillies, he's more than willing to take your Phillies questions.
I'm more than willing to hit on the Phillies with you for a couple minutes. I will go NBA. It's been a lot of sweeps. But, you know, with 3 days to the draft, it's hard for me to talk about anything else.
Oh, absolutely.
And
talking to Jeff's always great. The more
I cover this draft. This is why I haven't looked up every player for the first round. Because the more that I put into this draft, the less I know. It's ridiculous. The more I try and pinpoint what's going to happen, who's going where, is the more people leading me in a different direction.
I have to agree.
Like, so I can't wait.
What I wouldn't give to be a fly on the wall at Chip Kelly's office.
Right. I want to be in the last meeting, like the trade meeting, because that's what they're doing now.
I want to be in the war room.
That's what they're doing now. And the GM even allotted to it. He says, we're going to send everybody home, and we're going to take me and Chip, the top scout or two, and the coaches. You know, Bill Davis, the special teams coach,
right.
And the offensive coordinator, Pat Shurmur. And we're going to go over every scenario. And when they're saying scenario now, that means they're going to go over everything they're willing to give up to move off at certain spots. They've already made all the phone calls, and they're confident that they've looked around the league to say that that's a good price or not a good price. So these guys have done their homework, and they've played it as close to the chest as they possibly could. And they do a great job. And you know what? If there was one organization now, it's only a small sample size. It's a third offseason. So if I had to compare the Eagles to any other organization, now you see a lot of overhaul, and you don't really see that much from the team I'm about to mention, but I would have to say Bill Belichick and the Patriots. As far as you get nothing from Bill Belichick, you get nothing from the coaching staff as far as player to player. But you see character number one, he wants a franchise quarterback, and value at every position. Now, if you see this year, the only player they paid was probably McCourty, you know what I mean? And he's maybe the second-best safety in the NFL, one of four safeties maybe in the NFL. And I'm saying four, and I can't even think of the fourth guy. You know, he goes Chancellor and Thomas, and then, you know what I mean, McCourty. Who is the next safety on that list? I mean, there's a drop from them. Especially you're talking about these are the two teams who went to the Super Bowl last year, you know, mind you. So, yeah, great safeties lead to Super Bowl. Great safety play, great quarterback play. You know, they keep the offense and defense moving safe and sound. And right now we're lacking in that area on both sides. So that's really what I want to see. And now I mean, it's hard for me to even talk about Sam Bradford because who knows if he's not a bigger, you know, piece to this puzzle later down. You know, who knows? Who knows what Chip Kelly's thinking? Who knows what these guys got going on? I don't know. I'm doing my best to give you every scenario that I think. And coming down the road, you're really going to see this vision come into effect. And I'm telling you right now, give Chip Kelly his chance because he's been successful at every place he's ever been. And I'm not the person to give blind faith. I said earlier in the show, when it goes down to September and this team's not playing well and they lose these tough games on the road early, you know, I'm going to be the first one to jump on them and criticize. And now you're going to say, oh, this is a bad move. Then you can say it right now. You got to give the man his chance, his couple years to overhaul this Andy Reid team, you know, because Andy Reid's team in the list, you know, since McNabb left, they never won a playoff team. They never went anywhere. Chip Kelly, his first year, did what Andy Reid did with that team. You know what I mean? He turned a 6-10 team? Oh, I'm sorry, 4-12 the Eagles were the last year Andy Reid was here, and he turned it to a 10-6 team to host a playoff game. Now you hosted against a great team in New Orleans, and you get beat. On a last-second field goal. So it's not like you weren't in the game. Nick Foles, the whole offense and defense showed. I mean, Nick Foles went 27 touchdowns and 2 interceptions. He had early success, and now teams adjusted. The league adjusted. But going forward, you got to give the edge to Chip Kelly and what he's doing here. You got to give him his due degree to have this experiment.
Definitely, I agree. And like I said many times on the record, I am a big, big Chip Kelly advocate. And next up on the line, we have our next guest. We have Jimmy Kemsky. He's the Eagles reporter for the Philly Voice. We really appreciate him taking some time out tonight to jump on the program with us and talk some Eagles. Hey, Jimmy, can you hear me? How's it going?
Good. How are you guys?
We're doing pretty good. Thanks thanks again for taking the time out to jump on the show tonight. You're on with Justin and Mike on Wizard Radio.
All right.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's 3 days coming to the draft, and a lot of excitement building up. What do you think the Eagles need to add most this year? Is it a wide receiver, or is it in the defense? What does Chip Kelly need to address? I know the hype is about Mariota.
Yeah, if you're taking quarterback out of the equation, and quarterback isn't necessarily the most glaring need, although it's certainly the most important position in football, obviously, and possibly in sports. I do think they need to find that franchise quarterback because they're kind of in a situation where they don't have a lot of stability there. They're actually going to be going into 2015 with the fifth starting week one quarterback in 7 years, which is just not good. But if you take that out of the equation, there are three positions, and you mentioned a couple of them, wide receiver, offensive line, more specifically, guard in the short term, and then, of course, cornerback and safety. The whole defensive backfield, you can throw that in there. It's their biggest needs. And when Ed Manowitz talked about the most about the deepest and the best positions in the 2015 draft, he actually cited offensive line, corner, and wide receiver. So Eagles' biggest needs kind of match up with the strength of this draft, which is good. Personally, I feel that corner is probably their biggest need, really because, it's a big need. They gave up the third most 20-plus yard plays in the history of the NFL in 2014. So that's, their coverage on the back end just has to get better. A lot of people blame the safeties, but for me, it really kind of starts with the corners. The corners make the safeties' job a lot easier. And corners are more difficult to find than wide receivers. I think wide receivers are a position in the NFL. It's becoming easier to fill, while good help on the back end on the defense is becoming more difficult to find. So this is a strong corner draft, and I do feel like they have to get a couple guys there. And obviously the offensive line is getting old as well. You need a guy that can fill in that guard spot, maybe kick out to tackle eventually. So you have some short and long-term needs that you can fill there. On the offensive line, but yeah, I'd go corner if we're gonna go with the Eagles' biggest need heading into this draft.
And speaking of corner, do you think Brandon Boykin will have an expanded role this year, or do you see him as more of a trade chip to gather more picks? Now, with him only playing about half the snaps last year as the nickel corner, I don't know if he's really the fit for this defense and what Bill Davis wants to do.
Yeah, Brandon Boykin, clearly, in my opinion, the Eagles don't value him as much as, well, obviously the fan base and the media, but I also don't think that they value him as much as other teams around the rest of the league are going to value him. And when you're talking about a guy that's going into the final year of his rookie contract, if you can get something for him now, then you may as well do that than lose him after the 2015 season for absolutely nothing. Because I do think that there will be a team or two out there that, at least that will see him as a potential starter in the NFL, whereas I don't think the Eagles look at him as a player that can play on the outside whatsoever. So I do think that if they can get something for him in this draft, whether you package him with other things to move up in the draft, or if you're just going to get him for a straight up deal for something like that, like a mid round pick, then I think it makes sense to unload him now. And you look at what they did this offseason. Obviously they let Bradley Fletcher walk in free agency, rightfully so. They cut Kerry Williams. They brought in Byron Maxwell. They brought in Walter Thurman, who's been hurt but is a slot corner. They still have Nolan Carroll on the roster. And you look at last year when they benched Fletcher, they didn't put Boykin in to see what he could do on the outside. Instead, they put Nolan Carroll on the outside. So I think, the tea leaves are kind of there to read in that, Brandon Boykin's, tenure on the team may be coming to a close here soon.
Yeah, I just don't see him. There's other defenses that run more nickel and more dime. I really see him as a great player in the slot, but you saw even this year versus Larry Fitzgerald and the bigger receivers, he just really can't contend. He might be the best slot corner in the league, but yeah, like I see them as more, like you say, Walter Thurman, Nolan Carroll and Byron Maxwell. They're tall, big corners. And they tried it even with Bradley Fletcher and Kyrie Williams, you know. I mean, I've never seen two guys be right next to receivers so many times and just not make a play. But, you know, that's why you got to move on and pick new players. But coming into this draft, who do you think is the best fit at wide receiver? Would you see Chip Kelly go for another speedster, or would you like a guy like Jalen Strong, almost another fit for Jordan Matthews across from him?
Yeah, they've been all over the map in terms of the guys that they've brought in for their pre-draft visits. Jalen Strong, like you mentioned, was one of those guys. He's a, you know, bigger guy at 6'2", 215-ish pounds. And, you know, has a great leaping ability, wins contested catches. And then they've brought in smaller guys like a Philip Dorsett, you know, who's 5'10", and is an absolute speedster. They brought in some guys that are somewhere in between, like a Nelson Aguilar, out of USC, who's 6', does a really good job running routes, is a weapon on special teams, can get separation, has good hands. So they've just been kind of all over the map in terms of speed guys, guys with polish and running routes, like I mentioned with Aguilar and Rashad Green from Florida State. So I really don't know exactly what they're looking for at the wide receiver position. I think they'd like to get a big guy in there that can, you know, eventually take over for the role that Riley Cooper has now. I think Riley Cooper's long for the team in 2016, especially if he plays the way that he did in he plays the way he did in 2015, like he did in 2014, and certainly he's not going to be with the team in 2016. So I think they'd like to get a bigger guy who can play on the outside, who's a good blocker and can win those contested catches that he didn't win last year. And you have other guys that like in that sort of the Josh Huff type role that, you know, maybe don't necessarily have great size in terms of height, but do have good size in terms of weight and thickness. Josh Huff being a guy who can kind of do things after the catch once he has the ball in his hands. Didn't really get too much of a chance to do much in 2014. I think he'll see a bigger role going forward in 2015. But in terms of what the Eagles are specifically looking for at wide receiver, I think they're just looking for talent. Wide receiver being a position that I don't necessarily know that they have a specific quote-unquote prototype like they do on the defensive side of the ball, like you mentioned, at corner, where they do want bigger physical guys to play on that outside, and really you know, smaller guys playing on the outside is a little bit more of a non-starter for them.
Yeah, and going forward to that with this draft, speaking about all the depth that there is this the draft to move up? Would you be okay with them moving up, or would you rather them sit where they're at 20 with their picks?
Getting back to what Manowitz said, you know, when he talked with reporters for the first time, they see this draft as having 8 to 10 true impact players. So, you know, obviously they've identified somewhere between 8 and 10 players that they think will make an immediate impact on their team, maybe a couple more if you have guys that are, you know, perfect fits for their scheme. So if, you know, one of those guys fell into the mid-teens, then I could see a scenario where they make a modest trade-up. But the only real major trade-up that I think they're going to make, if they do it, would be for, obviously, Marcus Mariota. But a guy like Trey Waynes from Michigan State, the corner, the bigger corner with great coverage skills, he slipped into the mid-teens somehow, which I don't anticipate happening, then, you know, certainly they can make a trade-up for him. Or if one of the really talented edge rushers in this draft somehow fell into the mid-teens, you know, maybe they can go for one of those guys, or an offensive lineman that they really like that can play guard year one to replace Todd Harriman's, and then eventually kick out to right tackle when, you know, Jason Peters, you know, when his decline begins to accelerate and they move Lane Johnson over from right tackle to left tackle, you know, that guard can then kick out to right tackle. I think that solves both a short-term and a long-term need. So if there is a guy that they really like in that regard that slips into the mid-teens, I can see them moving up for a guy like that. But I think for the most part, the better move where they're sitting at 20 is to move back and potentially acquire more picks, because like I said, they seem to think that the biggest strengths of this draft are, again, fit their biggest needs with wide receiver, offensive line, and cornerback. So the more picks that you can acquire, the more of those type players that you can bring in, and you know, the more players that you can bring in like that, the better shots you have. You're going to find a guy that can play and start and be an effective, productive player on your team. So I think the move would be to to move back if he can. A modest move up for, you know, the players in this draft in particular, not really seeing a ton of value in moving up. But again, if a guy that they really have identified as a difference maker does fall into that area, it wouldn't shock me either.
Yeah, and I'm kind of in the category with you thinking that the depth is to move back. But I guess my one big question, it's so hard to ask this early in the year, especially with him coming off an injury, and it's hard to project injuries as a whole, but do you think Sam Bradford is a good fit? And if healthy, do you think he can be the quarterback this team needs going forward?
Well, I certainly think he'll be in a better position to succeed here than in Philly than he was in St. Louis. Obviously, in St. Louis, they didn't have the skill position players that the Eagles have, even with the Eagles having, you know, wide receivers who really aren't going to scare anyone. They do have a lot of skill position players that are, you know, really good players. They have the two running backs now, and DeMarco Murray and Ryan Matthews, who are both hammers. And then you have Darren Sproles, who obviously is a big-time weapon as a receiver out of the backfield. Zach Ertz is going to be a really good pass-catching tight end in the NFL. And Jordan Matthews seems like he's going to be a really effective volume catcher over the bulk of his career. Maybe Josh Huff steps up a little bit this year. So I think they do have some intriguing options at the skill positions. And then along the offensive line, you know, obviously this Eagles offensive line is a lot better than the crap that Sam Bradford played behind in St. Louis. So I think they're just set up better from the personnel perspective there. But also Sam Bradford ran spread offense at Oklahoma when he had so much success coming out as, you know, the number one overall pick. When he came out, he kind of, quote-unquote, checked off all the boxes in terms of, you know, what you're looking for in quarterback play, and that he had a good arm, he had an accurate arm, smart guy, leader, had sort of underrated mobility. Now, I don't know how much mobility he has left after a pair of ACL surgeries. I don't know how much confidence he has standing in the pocket, you know, knowing that he, I don't know how much he's going to trust his knees. But, you know, if the Eagles, the Eagles certainly have gotten two, they got obviously a great season out of Nick Foles in 2013 when, of course, he threw for 29, if you include the playoffs, 29 touchdowns, two interceptions. So I think this offense, the way that Chip is able to run the ball effectively and have receivers running wide open, I think it's an offense that's set up for really any quarterback to look better than they normally might. So no matter who the quarterback is, I think they're going to look better than what they really are in Chip Kelly's offense. So I think Sam Bradford is certainly, like I said, better suited to succeed in this offense than he was in St. Louis for all kinds of reasons. And I think he can be an effective quarterback, but, you know, you wonder how much of that is actually on Sam Bradford and how much of it is on the scheme.
Definitely. Any quarterback that is in Chip Kelly's scheme is going to put up numbers. The offense is just designed to, you know, put up yards and points. But my question for you right before we let you go, we don't want to take up too much of your time, is say that they can't get Mariota for, you know, he goes first to the Buccaneers, or a trade can't get worked out for the number two pick, and Sam Bradford ends up getting hurt. How far do you think that Mark Sanchez can take this team?
I think we saw that last year. I think Mark Sanchez is a quality backup. When he came in last year, they won the games that they should have won, with the exception of the Week 16 Redskins game that effectively ended their season, and they lost the games against the better opponents that they played. And I think that's basically what you'd see out of Mark Sanchez and the Philadelphia Eagles if he had to start in 2015. I think, you know, he's a guy that can come in if you have your number one go down. He can play a few games, keep you competitive, win you the games that you're supposed to win. But if he's your guy and you're expecting him to you know, finish out the season and go on some kind of run in the playoffs, I just don't think it's happening. And, you know, I don't think really you can expect that out of many backup quarterbacks in the NFL. So it's not the worst thing. I think he's a quality backup quarterback. But, again, if you're relying on him to go win you a Super Bowl, forget it.
Definitely. I mean, we got to just hope that Chip's got something up his sleeve. And if he ends up not getting his guy, that Sam Bradford can stay healthy.
I'm sorry. I actually didn't hear you there.
I was just saying that you know, if we got to put all of our hope in Mark Sanchez, we're definitely going to have a big problem. We just got to hope that Chip Kelly's got a plan up his sleeve, and if it ends up not working out, that just Sam Bradford doesn't get hurt.
I agree there.
Hey, Jimmy, we really appreciate you taking the time tonight to jump on the show and talk some Eagles with us.
Yeah, no problem.
Thanks. And everybody, that was Jimmy Kemsky, the Eagles writer for the Philly Voice. Check him out on Twitter at Jimmy Kemsky. He actually has a podcast out too, the Eagles Pod, IGGLES, on Liberty Broadcasting Network. He does a once a week podcast on the Eagles. Really in-depth stuff if you want to check it out sometime for all you hardcore Eagles fans that want somebody that will tell you what you want to know, not what you want to hear.
And, you know, one thing that has me thinking, and one thing that I'll watch after just during this year other than the Eagles, is the play of Nick Foles this year. That's really what I want to see. I want to see, now he went to St. Louis, and they did decent last year. They had some decent passing plays and rushing plays, you know what I mean? They were in probably the best division in football over the last 2-3 years, so it's been hard for them to gain any kind of momentum, but Jeff Fisher has those guys playing football. I'd like to see what Nick Foles is this year. You know, he's out of the blanket of Andy Reid and Chip Kelly, maybe arguably the two of the best QB gurus around that you've seen in the NFL or even in college over the last decade or so. I'm more so to Andy Reid, but then, you know, Chip Kelly recently, what he's been able to do with the guys like Mark Sanchez and Nick Foles and even Michael Vick, who didn't do anything in the next year with the Jets and who had a pretty good start to the season before he got hurt. So I'd really like to see where Nick Foles plays this year. And we'll see what he can do with Sam Bradford. You know, you're switching quarterbacks, and it'd be funny to me. Now, if he, you know, that's the whole thing. It's hard to talk about, and I've tried to stay off the Sam Bradford tangent because before this Thursday, you know, you can't make any kind of claim who's going to be here after that. I mean, you've heard people talk about, we talked about even today, Fletcher Cox, Michael Kendrick, Brandon Boykin, Evan Mathis. I mean, these are guys who probably aren't going to be on the team for 2, 3, 4 years anyway. Now, the two guys I want to keep out of that are, I think, probably our two best defensive players coming from last year. Maybe Malcolm Jenkins had something to say about this as well, but I would say Fletcher Cox and Michael Kendrick, you know, were probably the two best players on our defense last year. So I would not like to see any of them go, but now you have three starting inside linebackers. So you don't know. I mean, when he trades for Kiko Alonso, but can you make that move now when Kiko hasn't played in a year? I see him staying with the depth this year with two of his three inside linebackers being injured last year, and even Michael Kendrick missed some games. So he definitely wants depth there. So I don't know if we'll trade from there, and to trade your best player up front is really not what you want to do. You know, Fletcher Cox had a breakout year last year. I mean, I don't know. I mean, if you could trade him straight up from Mariota, maybe. But even still, I think I'd rather have Fletcher Cox than Mariota. Now, I mean, in this league, it's ridiculous to try to compare because the quarterback needs so much more, but I don't know. I mean, you see guys like Will Fork, these big guys, I mean, he's going to be a Hall of Famer, I think. Now, that's a big statement. Fletcher Cox is probably one of the best three techniques in the league. And he's a convert. He was a 4-3 defensive tackle to start. So, to me, I'll be very upset if Fletcher Cox gets traded. I'll be a little less upset, but pretty upset if Michael Kendricks gets traded.
Yeah,
anybody else, maybe Evan Mathis. I don't want to see Evan Mathis go either.
He's going to go, though, because he's an older player anyway. And, I mean, I agree with you.
The best left guard at his position maybe for the last 3 years when he's been healthy.
That's very possible. We got a guest up on the line now. We got our final guest of the night up. We have Patrick Causey, the Eagles writer over at Eagledelphia.com, and he wrote a great piece on Mariota the other day. I was reading it earlier today, and for everyone that is listening, I'm sure that you already know that I have a little bit of a man crush on Mariota. I can't wait for...
I wish I had a word counter for how many times you said it.
I know. I'm obsessed with him. But we're going to bring Patrick on the program right now to talk Mariota and NFL draft with us. Hey, Patrick, can you hear me? Thanks for taking time out tonight to join us.
I appreciate you having me. Thanks for bringing me on. I can hear you fine.
So you know, my first question off the bat is, are we going to get him? Are we going to get him? Regardless of, like, the scenario that it's going to happen, are we going to get my man here?
Well, I think it depends, obviously, right? I think one of the things that I'm not buying into is this idea that the Tennessee Titans are going to take him. Early on in the draft process, you just heard that they weren't really interested in him. And now as we're getting closer to the draft, all I'm hearing and all we're seeing in the reports is well, the Titans are really interested in taking Marcus Mariota. To me, that's a smokescreen. I think they're trying to drum up interest to get people to trade up to the number two overall pick. I really don't think they have any interest in taking him. And if you look at it with that perspective in mind, I think that it actually increases our chances that we get Mariota, because if you look at the draft order after the Tennessee Titans, the next 1, 2, 3 picks, the Jaguars, Raiders, Redskins, they don't need a quarterback. So then you're having to get down to number 6 or 7. That makes it much more realistic for the Eagles to trade up. Getting maybe to pick 5 as opposed to pick 2, I think, increases our chances. I heard you as I came onto the phone. I heard you guys talking about whether they should trade Fletcher Cox and Michael Kendricks. I'm firmly in the camp that they should not do that. I think that would be a terrible idea. But if they could package some picks involving Sam Bradford, maybe this year's first, next year's first, and another pick, then I'd be more inclined to do it. But I agree, we should not be moving somebody like Fletcher Cox, who's probably one of the 2 or 3 best defensive linemen in the NFL right now.
Oh, yeah, and I completely agree with that. I'm not in the positive about getting rid of any known commodity in the NFL. And now, even with Michael Kendricks had some injuries, he's still a known commodity. As this weekend, doesn't really fit here per se. He only played maybe half the snaps last year. But who do you think, other than Mariota, is I guess what position is the biggest need coming into this draft?
I think it's the secondary. I know that we went out and we addressed the secondary in free agency. We signed Byron Maxwell. That was a good pickup. But outside of that, we really haven't done much to shore up the other cornerback spot, and we still have that gaping hole in the safety spot. I think 2 names to keep an eye on are probably Byron Jones, the cornerback out of Connecticut, and then actually a guy that I think we could probably get in the 2nd or 3rd round is Eric Rowe, who's the cornerback/safety hybrid out of Utah. Both of those guys are actually able to play corner, but they also, I think, could translate to safety, which is really, I think, our biggest need. And if you look at a guy that the Eagles pursued hard in the offseason, Devin McCourty, he actually started out with the Patriots and in college as a cornerback and only made the switch to safety a few years into the league. So I think that those are two guys that in the first round, we could target in the 20th pick or maybe Eric Rowe in the 2nd or 3rd round and have that person immediately step in and fill that hole in the second safety spot.
And, yeah, I completely agree with you. There's definitely a lot of depth. You even heard from Marowitz. I don't know if I said that right. I need to get the pronunciation better. But he said, and the way he worded it, which really caught me, was there's a lot of depth in cornerback safety or cornerback D-back. So he sees a lot of versatility. And you see with Bill Davis, that's what he wants. And it almost seems like they're trying to build an offense and defense almost an amoeba team that is able to use their base defense and contend with 3 wide receiver sets. You saw Nate Allen just wasn't able to do it. So I think the sky's the limit for this defense if they can get the right player. Do you agree with what Chip Kelly's done this offseason? Are you on board?
Oh, man, that's a big question. I have concerns. I'm a big Chip Kelly head coach believer. I really believe in what he's able to do as a head coach. And after what we've seen, where he's been able to go 10-6 in his first 2 years with, you know, Mark Sanchez and Mike Vick and Matt Barkley taking a lot of snaps at quarterback. I'm a believer. Chip Kelly, the GM, I have some hesitation. If you look at the way that he's approached team building, it seems sort of contrary to what some of the better teams in the NFL do, right? The Steelers, the Packers, the Patriots, they don't normally spend a ton of money in free agency. They really focus on building through the draft and then signing, re-signing their guys and then supplementing through free agency. Chip has sort of cleaned house, gotten rid of a lot of talent, and has brought in guys from free agency. And historically, that doesn't always seem to work. So I'm holding out, you know, I'm holding reservation here. A lot of these guys he signed, he has some familiarity with. A lot of Oregon players, a lot of guys that if he doesn't have familiarity with, like Sam Bradford, their coaching staff does. But a lot of them are also injured. So there just seems like there's a lot of risk associated with this plan. I'll say this. I think it's either going to work really, really well, or I think it's going to end horribly. I'm not sure that there's any middle ground here where the team goes 8-8.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like Chip Kelly was anywhere near the middle ground. So I think that's a pretty good guess. But you know what? Speaking of that, and there's been a certain level of excitement, I'll say. Chip Kelly brought it here a few years ago, but it's really, I think, peaked. Since maybe the moves this offseason in Sam Bradford, do you remember draft, maybe as a whole, but even for the Eagles, it was this exciting? I can't think of one for a pretty long time.
I can't either, and I think that, you know, to Chip Kelly's credit, he has mastered the art of making the Eagles relevant. You know, all of the different offseason moves that he's made, bringing in Tim Tebow, and now all of the focus is on what he's going to do. If you had a chance to read Peter King's Monday Morning Quarterback, he actually quotes a high-ranking and what he calls one of the best GMs in the league. And that GM actually said the entire league is focused on what Chip Kelly's going to do and whether he's going to make a move. No one knows what he's going to do. And so I think, you know, that goes with what you're saying. Everyone's really focused in on the Eagles. Where are we going to go? What are we going to do? Are we going to, quote-unquote, do the deal? And I'm really excited about it. I'm also, to be honest, I'm kind of excited to have it over with, right? Because I'm a little, almost reached my saturation level when it comes to the discussion of whether we're going to trade for Marcus Mariota. I'm looking forward to some finality here.
Right, it's so hard to speculate. I mean, these teams and these GMs play so close to the chest. And they really give you nothing. Even with the press conference we saw earlier this week or earlier last week, I think it was, He didn't speak about one player, didn't make a comment about anything, only a little bit about philosophy, and who knows how much he's even going to follow what he said. And like you said, you see a team like Tennessee who's been smokescreening this whole time, really. Like you said, early in the draft, you know, Tennessee was never going to take him, and now it's like he's their golden boy.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if Tennessee takes him at number two. It could happen, and certainly I wouldn't fault them for doing it. I personally think that Mariota is probably the best, easily the best quarterback prospect in this draft, and I think he might be the best player in this draft. You know, looking over his tape and seeing all of the things that he brings to the table, you know, his accuracy, his work ethic, his ability to throw from the pocket, his ability to break down defenses, and probably my favorite thing about Mariota is that he's not a running quarterback that can throw. He's really a passing quarterback that can just extend plays with his legs. And I think in today's NFL, that's crucial. I'm a big proponent of Marcus Mariota. I hope he's in Eagles green at the end of Thursday night. I'm kind of skeptical it's going to happen. But if I'm the Tennessee Titans, it's a no-brainer they're going to take him. I just don't see it happening.
Definitely. Now, I'm really worried that he's actually going to go number one. I think that Tampa Bay is going to take him number one because they, I mean, with the talent they have on offense and they have an up-and-coming defense, they're a quarterback away from being a competitive team in the NFC. I'm really worried he's going to go first. Say Mariota does go first and the trade with Tennessee becomes irrelevant. At that point in time, say, and you're Chip Kelly, would you move down from 20th to collect more picks for a better chance to hit on somebody later in the draft?
Well, two things on that. One, I'm down in Tampa now, and the word on the around here is that they're pretty much set on Jameis Winston. The Glazer family has already approved the pick, and it sounds like it's a foregone conclusion. Now, something could happen that changes that, but I do think that Winston's probably going to be their guy. And sort of an unstated benefit to that, in Tampa there are a ton of FSU fans, a ton of people that are from that area that moved down to Tampa after graduating from college. So he's going to be a very popular player. But if that does happen and Mariota's gone, if I'm the Eagles, the one prospect I targeted the entire time is the cornerback out of Michigan State, Trey Waynes. I think that he fits everything the Eagles need. He has the potential, probably the only corner in this draft that has potential to be a number one lockdown guy. He's a long, rangy guy, which we know the Eagles like. He's very good against the run. He's very good in press man coverage. He checks for me all the boxes, and if there's a way for us to move up, I think we'd probably have to get into the 12 to 15 range to get him. But if we could do that, that would be the next move that I would encourage Chip Kelly to do if we don't get Mariota.
Well, that was Patrick. Let me tell you, I know we're on radio right now and you can't see me, but when you told me that Jameis Winston was probably going first, I had a little Tom Cruise on the Oprah show reaction there, because that leads right into what I want. But so
well, don't hold me to it if it doesn't happen. I don't want you to, you know, get mad at me. But I'm pretty. It seems like all signs are pointing towards Winston going to the Bucks.
Yeah, I would really rather it go that way. I know that it seems like a lot of other teams haven't even done work on Jameis Winston, so I find it hard to believe that he doesn't go number one overall. But coming forward, you know, with all the transition over the last couple of years, I'll tell you, I don't even have an Eagles jersey with somebody who's on the team anymore. I had Deshaun Jackson.
Yeah, you and me Trent both.
I mean, who would you pick this year? Who's the safe bet to buy to have for the next couple of years? And I'm finding trouble.
You know,
I'm
actually embarrassed to admit that I didn't already own his jersey, but I came up this year and I took my dad to the Seattle Seahawks game, and I said, you know what, I'm going to get a Brian Dawkins jersey. I had no idea that this was all about to happen when I got the jersey, but I decided to get that. And I feel like, given what we know with Chip Kelly, I'm just going to stick to buying the old school retro jerseys, because then, you know, he can't trade Brian Dawkins, right? He can't get rid of Reggie White. So you know, I think I might stick to those guys until we get a little bit further into Chip Kelly's tenure and we see a little bit more stability there. I'll tell you, if he does get Mariota, I think you'll be safe keeping his jersey in your closet, because I don't think Chip Kelly will ever get rid of him.
Oh yeah, I'll be in line at Modell's at 8 o'clock in the morning, Friday morning, waiting for my all black Eagles jersey number 8. Might even buy, you know, a couple jerseys, white one, green one. I'll get them all. I'll get them all number 8 if he comes here.
Yeah, I'll be right there with you. That's a good call. I'll probably go with the white and then the black. Maybe get two of them, double up, because we know that's probably the only safe prospect we can get where you won't trade them.
Right. But, yeah, coming more to back to the current roster, do you think they are as a safety on our roster that could fill the other side? Do you see a guy like Earl Wolf or maybe even Jalen Watkins making a run at that role?
Those two guys are really hard to judge, right? Because we just haven't seen them play. Watkins, I guess you can maybe give him some benefit of the doubt because he really only came in at the end of the year. Earl Wolf, he's been there for 2 years now, and it just seems like he can't shake the injury bug. And you could tell that Chip really got frustrated with him last year. So I want to say that it's too early to rule either of those players out. But at the same time, I would feel a lot better if we came out of this first or second round of the draft and we had somebody that we could say, okay, that's going to be the guy that we're putting in at safety spot, whether that's Byron Jones. You know, I don't think it's going to be Landon Collins. I know a lot of mock drafts had the Eagles going with Landon Collins. I don't see him as a fit. I don't think he has the coverage skills the Eagles want. But personally, I would much rather go into this season with the Eagles having addressed that position in the draft rather than trying to rely on somebody like Earl Wolf.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And there's even some other names on that chart, but I think you're right that I think I'd definitely like to see them get somebody in draft, at least to compete, at least to make them beat somebody. I think Nate Allen really hurt this team last year. I mean, if anything, you can point to a game where he almost basically lost it by himself almost versus Arizona with an 80-yard touchdown over his head. So that's a really big spot for us. And you, especially when you look at last season, and it was almost like New York Flyers fan a year ago when the Rangers go to the playoffs after, you know, you lose game seven, they go to the championship. Now you see the Eagles were a couple plays away from, they could have been 15-1. At the same time, they could have been probably 7-9. So they're a really close margin. So coming up in this year, I mean, seeing what, I wonder what, how much do you think Byron Maxwell can impact this team? Do you think he's the shutdown corner that we've been waiting for?
I have some concerns. I think that he's a very good player, but you just don't know, right? You don't know how much of his success was a byproduct of playing alongside three all-world, you know, secondary players. You had Richard Sherman and Earl Thomas, who every Eagles fan wishes was on the Eagles, right? No offense to Brandon Graham and Cam Chancellor. Those are three of the best secondary players in the NFL. So was Byron Maxwell just a benefactor playing alongside them, or is he really a good player? I think that's a fair question to ask. I will point out that because of how good Richard Sherman was, Byron Maxwell was targeted a lot, right? People sometimes tended to avoid Richard Sherman altogether. If you remember the first game of the season where the Packers played the Seattle Seahawks, Aaron Rodgers, who's the best quarterback in the NFL, he didn't even throw to Richard Sherman's side. So, you know, Byron Maxwell has been tested. It seems like he's a very good player. Seems like he's a big upgrade over Kerry Williams, and obviously he's an upgrade over Bradley Fletcher. I think anybody, you and I, could be upgrades over that guy. But I think Byron Maxwell has the talent. It's just a matter of, you know, did he benefit from being in Seattle? And it's just really hard to answer that question. So I guess we're just going to have to wait to find out.
Yeah, and I think that's really the key word to everything with the Eagles right now. It's so hard to predict, especially before this draft. I mean, who knows who's even going to be on the roster in 5 days. So coming forward, I think we're going to have to – I don't even want to get into the schedule. You know what I mean? I've been trying to stay away from the schedule, stay away from Sam Bradford. I don't want to get too attached to anything on this team right now.
Yeah, you're probably doing yourself a favor there. I actually avoided looking at Marcus Mariota for the longest time because I didn't want to get attached and I didn't want to get my hopes up. But when I went to write this article, and I'm going to have another piece coming out where I break down the film on him probably in a day or two, and I started looking at everything that this kid can do and just how dynamic he is. And, you know, I'm setting myself up for failure in typical Philly fan fashion by buying into this guy and then all of a sudden, you know, watch him end up on the New York Jets or something. But you just never know with Chip Kelly. It would have been very easy for Chip Kelly to go into this offseason and only do two things, address the secondary and get some help along the offensive line. If he kept the entire team as is and played it safe, no one would have faulted him for that. They would have said, you know what, the Eagles were 10-6. They've got their two biggest holes plugged. This is a team that's on the rise. But for better or worse, Chip Kelly went for it, and he did what he believes in. And I at least admire him for doing that and for having the conviction to really go out there and just say, you know what, if we're going to win, we're going to do it my way. So it'll be interesting to see what he does Thursday night. I'm expecting him to have something up his sleeve. But your guess is as good as mine as to what that's going to be.
Definitely. And just one more question before we get you out of here. We don't want to take up too much of your time. But let me ask you a little bit about these running backs. You know, we got Darren Sproles on the roster. We got Ryan Matthews. We got DeMarco Murray. All three of them are, you know, solid running backs in the NFL.
Pro Bowlers.
Pro Bowl, you know, quality running backs. Does this pretty much, you know, set the stage that you know that Chip is looking for a read option quarterback? He doesn't want a pocket passer or a Sam Bradford-like quarterback. You know, he went out, I'm not saying he's going to play quarterback, so nobody freak out. I'm not saying Tim Tebow should be the starter, but he went out and got a more mobile quarterback. Do you think that with the addition of all these running backs, Chip's setting himself up to run a read option-like offense?
I don't know about that because, you know, one of the things that Chip Kelly said from the start is that the biggest thing he values with a quarterback is repetitive accuracy. He wants a – and actually it's funny that we have Tim Tebow on the roster. I'm sure you have seen the quotes going around the internet that Chip Kelly said back in 2011, my offense is predicated on a quarterback that can throw, not a running back that, you know, that can throw. And I don't want a Tim Tebow style quarterback on my team. It's kind of funny he said that then, and now he has Tebow on his offense. But I think Chip really does mean it when he says he values accuracy from the pocket above all else. I do think Chip Kelly's offense would be more dynamic if he had a more athletic guy back there. But if you have three really good running backs, it almost takes away the need to have that running quarterback because instead of having your quarterback have to run, you can just run through all three of those guys and just keep subbing them in and relying on all three instead of having to rely on one guy plus the quarterback. So I think in an ideal world, if Chip Kelly had his preference, he'd take a guy that could do both, that could run and pass. But I think if push comes to shove, he's going to want the guy that can stand tall in the pocket and deliver the ball with accuracy over maybe a Tim Tebow type guy who really, you know, has no business being a quarterback in the NFL.
Yeah,
definitely agree with that.
I can agree with that. Hey, hey Patrick, we really appreciate you taking time to jump on the program with us tonight and break down Eagles and more specifically Marcus Mariota. I'll definitely be keeping an eye out for your second piece for that article that will be coming out.
I appreciate you guys having me on. And, yeah, take a look at it at eagledelphia.com. It should be up later this week, so I appreciate it.
Awesome. Great stuff over on eagledelphia.com. And great stuff from Patrick for jumping in and joining us. And definitely building up the hype machine for me.
Yeah, we'll have to bring coming weeks after the draft.
We need to have
all this anticipatory talk, and I'll tell you right now, I cannot wait to talk about things that happened and not things that are going to happen. Like Pat said, I had my fill. My anticipation meter is through the roof. I mean, I had to take Tylenol PM at night. I mean, it's unbelievable. No, I'm kidding about the last time, but it's pretty close. Hard to sleep knowing that draft day is less than 72 hours.
I know. We're now down to...
This is what I call...
About 70 hours.
Adult Christmas. NFL draft day.
I guess we can go with that. And also,
the gifts just come to you. You don't have to buy nothing for nobody.
Mm.
The gifts just come to you.
How about the gift of... right as I said it, I forgot its name.
Nothing beats the gift of Wizbit Radio.
Absolutely. Oh, I'm forgetting. How about the gift of Danny Watkins?
We get a gift like Danny Watkins, I am off the that easy.
Or like, Marcus Smith.
Like, listen, know this. If Eagles' passion is like a woman's scorn, it will love you unconditionally if you succeed. But cross her, and it will be a cruel mistress. Just remember that, Chip Kelly. This Eagle fan base will give you love, but treat us bad and turn us wrong, and you've seen what happened, Andy.
All right. And on that note, we're going to start to wrap it up here. Thank you for everyone for tuning in and listening to us. You can check out all of our past episodes on the website, wizwitradio.com. Special thanks to Jeff Warren of the PhiladelphiaTable.com. Judy Kemsky, the Eagles writer for the Philly Voice, and Patrick Causey, one of the Eagles writers over at EagleDelphia.com for jumping on the show with us. We only have 70 hours for the draft. I can't wait. We're going to have a whole draft party lined up. We're going to get a dunk tank. We're going to put Mike in the dunk tank.
I'll be in the dunk tank. I don't care.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. He's going to be in there. It's going to be a whole great big thing. I'm your host, Justin Emery, here with Michael Irano. Thanks for listening, and we are out from the Red Sound Studios in Warrington, PA.